The former head of the CIA tells a Missoula audience what he thinks is the nation's biggest security threat. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry previews some statewide rallies on climate change, reporter Edward O'Brien gets some tips on scooping dog poop, and in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with violinist Adele Anthony about her career and upcoming Montana concert. In sometimes salty language, the former head of the CIA, Leon Panetta, covered everything from torture to budget deficits in a wide-ranging talk today at the University of Montana. Besides heading the CIA, Panetta also served as Secretary of Defense and as Chief of Staff to President Bill Clinton. Panetta spoke to a riveted audience at the annual Jones-Tam Law School lecture. He was questioned for about 40 minutes by his friend and famous trial attorney Robert Bennett about domestic and foreign policy. Panetta also served in Congress as a representative from California from 1977 to 1993, a time he says when Congress and the administration were able to work together. He had harsh words for the current congressional stalemates.
I just deeply feel that the purpose of people going back to Washington is to get something done and to not just sit on their ass and do nothing.
Panetta convinced President Obama to take the risk of going after Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, which he says was the top priority when he took over the CIA. He says the 10 minutes it took to positively identify the dead bin Laden was the longest 10 minutes of his life. He says risk is inherent in governing effectively.
Governing is not easy in this country. It's not easy. But it's done because you're willing to sit down, put things on the table, and you're not going to get everything you want. You compromise here, you compromise there, but you move the country forward. That incentive to be able to do that, which is the whole heart and soul of governing, is just not there.
Panetta says both he and President Obama agreed that so-called enhanced interrogation techniques should be discontinued, but he also says those techniques help find bin Laden. He also defended the use of drones as a better option than sending troops or indiscriminately bombing an area to take out al-Qaeda leaders.
I realize there's a lot of debate and a lot of questions that are being raised, but the fundamental responsibility of the President of the United States, fundamental responsibility of the Director of the CIA and the Secretary of Defense is to protect this country. To protect this country. And yes, I don't believe that in the United States, you have to choose between our security and our freedom.
Acknowledging the country is tired of war, Panetta cautions against the U.S. withdrawing from its world leadership role.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States has to maintain world leadership because of our values, because of what we represent, and frankly, there's no other country that can play the important role that the United States plays in what is a very dangerous world.
Cyber attacks pose the greatest security threat for the future, according to Panetta, and the inability for both the President and Congress to deal with the country's growing deficit.
That could be the most dangerous national security issue that we will be confronting, is the inability of Washington to deal with that deficit issue. That has to be a priority if we're going to have a strong defense, if we're going to have strong programs that deal with all kinds of concerns. I don't give a damn what your priority is. Whatever your priority is, if we don't have the resources to invest in those priorities, we will not be a strong America in the future. We'll be a nation in decline.
At the end of his talk, attorney Robert Bennett described Panetta as a national treasure, and Panetta got a standing ovation from the packed crowd.
And in other news from around the state, federal legislation to expand protections along the Rocky Mountain Front has received another endorsement, this one from the county where more than half of the affected area lies. The Independent Record reports the Lewis and Clark County Commission voted to back the Rocky Mountain Front Heritage Act. Its endorsement follows one earlier this month by the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission. The bill would add more than 67,000 acres of new wilderness to the Bob Marshall Wilderness Complex and grants less restrictive protections to another 208,000 acres. The bill is co-sponsored by Montana Democratic Senators John Tester and John Walsh. County Commission Chairwoman Susan Goodguy says she plans to ask Republican Representative Steve Daines to introduce a similar bill in the House that also would expand grazing rights.
A former correctional facility nurse convicted of having sex with an inmate has pleaded guilty to trying to threaten a witness. The Montana Standard reports 45-year-old Tisha Ann Brunell changed her plea yesterday in Anaconda Court on the charge of solicitation to tamper with a witness. A jury convicted Brunell last month of 48 criminal charges, including multiple counts of sexual intercourse without consent and transferring illegal items. By law, inmates cannot consent to sex. Brunell had worked at the Sanction Treatment Assessment Revocation and Transition Center in Butte. Prosecutors say Brunell called several people before her trial in attempts to intimidate a witness slated to testify. A sentencing hearing will be held after a pre-sentence investigation is completed for both the witness tampering and original charges.
Major environmental legislation like the Clean Air and Endangered Species Act followed the first Earth Day celebration in April of 1970. Whitefish resident Steve Thompson is hoping the growth of local efforts across the country will again have a similar effect, this time in relation to climate change. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on the first statewide series of rallies to support climate solutions.
Glacier Climate Action is what member Steve Thompson calls an ad hoc citizens group of people who came together out of a common concern about climate change.
Just people coming together that they're sort of tired of the dithering that is on the most important, most consequential issue really since humanity has walked this earth. 300,000 years, here we find ourselves living during this period where we're at a crossroads.
Thompson of Whitefish says similar groups have sprung up across the nation and the state. On Saturday, there are at least 13 communities across Montana rallying to support climate solutions. Thompson says Montana is in a unique position to be part of the problem and part of the solution.
You know, the first rule when you find yourself in a deep hole is to stop digging. Well, we need to stop digging coal and exporting it to China. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is the huge opportunity for renewable energy production and local solutions.
Thompson says Saturday's event will have a focus on what's happening in Montana with alternative energy development and the potential for other solutions to climate change problems. Through the day, there will be rallies in Columbia Falls and Whitefish, a roundtable discussion at the Salish Kootenai College in Pablo, a gathering and conversation about climate change in Big Fork, and the Kalispell Rally at Depot Park will feature the Tropical Montana Marimba Ensemble. The capstone event in the evening in Whitefish is combining science with presentations from U.S. Geological Survey scientists Dan Fagry and Lisa McKean on their research documenting the shrinking glaciers in Glacier National Park, as well as music and presentations by artists. One of those artists is Diane Burko, who has spent the past 40 years photographing and painting monumental and geologic phenomena. Big mountains, glaciers, and the Grand Canyon are among her projects, but her focus narrowed in on glaciers in 2006. During Burko's research, she came upon a site about repeat photography and found the work being done in Glacier Park. Scientists have been snapping photos of the park's glaciers and comparing them to historic photos taken at the same spot. What they're seeing is a lot more rock, a lot less glacier.
And the whole concept of being able to see a glacier change within 100 or 150 years right before my eyes by these chronological images just blew me away. I said, wow, there it is in a nutshell. And that was the beginning of my adventure, my Politics of Snow project, and it sort of brought me where I am today.
Today, Burko counts trips to both poles, as well as Glacier National Park, where she has taken pictures and created artwork to tell the story of what's happening with the ice and snow. Part of her work involves collaborating with the scientists conducting the climate change research. She says they look at it as outreach.
In other words, how do you explain something as invisible, really, as climate change to the public? How can you get the idea across? And, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. So somehow I've been able to incorporate their recessional lines, their facts, and making them into art seems to be more compelling for an audience. You know, sometimes you just can't get the whole picture by looking at a graph.
Thompson says all the coordinated events on Saturday are coming from local efforts. He says in this way it echoes the first Earth Day in 1970. He describes it as something that came from the ground up, forcing elected officials to take notice.
And really what we're trying to do is spark a movement. You know, we're not seeing our so-called elected leaders or opinion leaders stepping forward to confront this huge challenge. So the citizens are doing it on their own. Maybe if the citizens lead, the leaders will follow.
The Whitefish event, Stories from the Mountain, Songs from the Soul, starts at 7:30 at the O'Shaughnessy Center and costs $5 at the door. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Events will also take place 12 to 2 p.m. on Saturday in Billings, Bozeman, Great Falls, Hamilton, Helena, Lame Deer, Missoula, and Red Lodge.
Montana officials warn that scammers are sending email messages to people in and out of the state claiming they owe money to the State Department of Revenue. Revenue Director Mike Cadis said in a statement today he considers the messages to be a threat to the public that could potentially harm computer systems and steal personal and financial information. He says the email messages arrive with different subject lines, one of which claims the recipient owes money to the department. The Revenue Department became aware of the scam today after people began calling about the messages they received. Officials say its notifications are sent through the U.S. Postal Service on Revenue Department letterhead.
The editor-in-chief of the National Geographic magazine is in Missoula to give tonight's annual Dean Stone Lecture at the University of Montana. Chris Johns will talk about the 125-year history of the venerable magazine, which reaches 40 million people around the world in 39 languages. Johns says the magazine has stayed relevant by embracing cutting-edge photography and technology.
We were the first to really dive deeply into underwater photography, and we did a lot of flash photography. We started to do more and more color in the magazine. First, we did color tinting of photographs in the magazine, which are actually magnificent. They're beautiful. And, of course, the other thing we've done is embrace technological change and looked at that as opportunities. The iPad, video, audio, immersive storytelling with all the great tools we have out there to tell stories.
Chris Johns will give a free public lecture tonight at 7 o'clock in the University Center Theater on the University of Montana campus. We'll have a feature interview with Johns next week during Montana Evening Edition.
A second-grade exercise in persuasive letter writing led to an official reminder from Missoula authorities today. Leash your dogs and, oh yeah, don't forget to pick up their poop, too. Edward O'Brien has more.
Only in such a dog-friendly town as Missoula could more people and media outlets attend a dog-poo-themed press conference than a recent city budget hearing.
I had one camera at a budget meeting yesterday, and I had 15 at the dog-poop rally. I think that's testament to how much Missoula grooves on dogs, right?
That's Missoula Mayor John Engen. Engen and one of his family's two pooches, Cooper, helped host today's press conference at Pine View Park adjacent to Rattlesnake Elementary School. That's where the idea was hatched for today's event. Mrs. Jarvis's second grade students were asked to practice their persuasive letter writing skills. Two of her students, Alta Genesian and Sophia Kalmi, felt pretty passionately about dog waste. This is how Alta put it during today's press conference.
The reason I wrote this letter is because us kids like to play in parks, and we don't like to step in poop, and we don't like to roll in it when we roll down the hills. So we want everybody to clean up dog poop around the world because kids and adults like to play in parks. And the reason I wrote the letter is because I wanted to make my dream come true.
Sophia says the Garden City is just too great a place to be, well, soiled by abandoned doggy doo.
I wrote to the mayor because I was wondering if he could help me out with this issue. And what inspired me to write this letter is that Missoula's just a beautiful, wonderful place to live in. And then when there's dog waste, it just takes away from the beauty. So I would really encourage everyone to just pick up after their dogs.
Mayor Engen says he wholeheartedly agrees with the girls. He says this and other dog-related problems boils down to a simple quality of life issue.
Some of this is a dog safety issue, right? So I see canines all the time who are off-leash, may not necessarily be under control, and certainly someone else's dog may not be under control. So there's good reason to have your dog on a leash in a park. Also very good reason to pick up after yourself because it's the adult polite thing to do. And we learned that from second graders today. Pretty awesome.
Missoula City County Animal Control Director Jeff Dara says Missoula's says poop problem is not unique to Pine View Park.
It's estimated in Missoula County that there's over 30,000 dogs. And you know, if you do the math, that's about one dog to probably every three people in Missoula County. So there are a lot of dogs here. And when you live in a residential area, the park might be the place to take your dog. Well, it is, but you still have to keep the dog on a leash and pick up after your dog. And so we're just trying to get that message out there and educate people to remember to do all that, because other people want to enjoy the same park that you do.
Dara's team is now unrolling a spring law enforcement blitz.
We have four animal control officers, and they have authority granted to them to issue citations by city and county ordinances. If you don't pick up after your dog or have your dog licensed or have your dog on a leash, you can be issued a citation by those officers. And the penalty is always up to the judge, but can carry a maximum of a $500 fine.
For her part, Sophia Calmy supports the increased poop scooping dog leashing enforcement effort.
I mean, if this is going to be a city where people like having pets, then please take care of them. I mean, we don't want to see your dog's waste.
Out of the mouths of babes. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Is it a council member for me?
Wranglers in the West for decades have cashed in on the allure of getting on a horse and setting out on an open trail. But they say they've had to add bigger horses to their stables to help carry larger tourists over the rugged terrain. Draft horses, the diesels of the horse world, are being used in ever greater numbers to make sure wranglers don't lose out on income from potential customers of any size who come out to get closer to the West of yesteryear. Ranch operators say they began adding the bigger horses in the 1990s, but the pace has picked up in recent years. Horses of 1,800 pounds now hit the trail, giving riders of more than 300 pounds an opportunity to experience life in the saddle.
Violinist Adele Anthony has performed with orchestras and chamber ensembles around the world and will soon be in Missoula for a concert with the String Orchestra of the Rockies. A native of Tasmania, Anthony studied at Juilliard and won her first major competition at the age of 13. In this feature interview with news director Sally Mock, Anthony says her interest in this instrument began at a very young age.
You know, my father is a now retired violinist, but at the time he was a violinist in the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra in Australia. And apparently I used to imitate him with a brush and comb, following him around. So that's how they knew I was interested in the violin, and that was when I was about 1.5 or so. Soon after that, I began lessons on a 1/16th size violin with the Suzuki method, which is specially tailored to very young children.
It seems to be a method that's quite successful and also one that professional musicians certainly endorse.
Oh, definitely. And I think it was a wonderful way to begin the violin. They, you know, they emphasize a social setting. So my memories of my lessons were kind of a very short lesson with my teacher and kind of playing with my friends. So it was more of a social interaction from my point of view, and I enjoyed it.
And you were successful early. I think you won a very major competition when you were 13. Did you know early on, even at that age, that this was going to be your professional career?
You know, I always enjoyed playing the violin and didn't really know what the future would hold, especially, you know, living in Australia and so far away from a lot of the musical scene. So we always kept options open, and I applied for university, but I also applied for the Juilliard School in New York, which is where I came, and loved it here, so stayed with the violin. And I was very lucky early on in Australia to have a lot of performance opportunities.
Not a hard transition for you to move to New York and leave your home of Australia?
Well, I think in a way I was expecting it to be completely different, and it was, so it wasn't such a rude awakening, you know, so to speak. So the nice part was that when I got to Juilliard, I met a lot of young violinists all my age coming from all over the world doing the same thing. So it was a wonderful thing.
And you are married to another well-known violinist, Gil Shaham, and you have three children. How tough is that to manage your professional careers and all that?
You know, well, the kids really definitely take priority over everything else. So one of us is always home with them, and we organize our concert schedules way in advance around their schedules. And, you know, I, at the same time, enjoy very much playing as well, because it's a luxury these days.
You've had a beautiful performance with your husband of a piece by the Spanish composer and violinist Pablo Sarasate. Just a beautiful piece, Navarra for Two Violins.
Oh, well, that's, you know, a piece we've played for a long time, and playing together is one of our favorite things to do, which we don't get to do very often because we usually travel separately because of the kids. but on certain occasions, especially during the summer when we travel as a family, we sometimes play together. But that's one of our favorite pieces to play. You know, the way Sarasate wrote for the violin was incredible, and it's an enjoyable piece to play together. It's fun and brilliant, and it's an exciting piece to play.
And technically challenging, certainly.
Oh yeah, it definitely goes into the stratosphere of the violin. But that's one of the unique challenges of Sarasate, and I mean all his music is beautiful like that.
You have such a varied repertoire, from Vivaldi to Philip Glass.
Right. I think we're very fortunate, in the violin to have a great range of repertoire and all great pieces, So there's the, Baroque, early classical, and all those wonderful romantic concertos, which I love to play also, like Brahms and Sibelius, and then moving on to the modern repertoire and contemporary repertoire, like the Uwaisen, which we'll be playing in Missoula.
You mentioned Sibelius. There's one piece that you play, the violin concerto in D. It's just so gorgeous. I love that piece, and I love your performance of it.
Oh, thank you. That's also a favorite to play, and it's just, it's an amazing piece that we're able to have for the violin.
That must be a popular piece as well.
It is. I think it's a popular piece for people listening also.
You, as you mentioned, will be performing soon with the String Orchestra of the Rockies. Have you performed with them before? And how do you adjust when you come into a new group like that and you rehearse and you have to kind of pick up on each other's character, I guess?
Right. No, we haven't met before, but I'm looking forward very much to it. I love the, string orchestra genre, and there's a certain flexibility and a sense of community, because there is no conductor, so we really have to be keyed into each other to make a performance happen. And I think, people playing in a chamber music setting are very receptive to and very adaptable, so receptive to ideas. So we hopefully will have a great time.
And, of course, the icing on the cake is you get to come to Montana.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that very much.
I have been speaking with violinist Adele Anthony, who will be performing with the String Orchestra of the Rockies on Sunday, May 4th at 7:30 in the Music Recital Hall on the University of Montana campus. Ms. Anthony, thank you so much for giving us a glimpse into your career, and best of luck.
Thank you very much, Sally.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers and lows in the upper 20s to mid-30s. Tomorrow, rain showers are likely with highs in the 50s. In central Montana tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies with isolated rain showers and lows in the 30s. Wind gusts could reach up to 50 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and highs in the 50s. In southwest Montana tonight, it should be mostly cloudy with scattered rain and snow showers with lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow calls for cloudy skies with rain and snow showers through the day with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs in the 50s. And now for the editorial comments of Monica Ruiz.
People talk about hunger and hunger issues, they often picture a homeless man begging on the street corner. And while that's one face of hunger, it's not completely representative of everyone hunger impacts. Hunger and food insecurity impact people of all ages from all walks of life. Our customers at the Gallatin Valley Food Bank are working families, seniors, college students, and people living on fixed incomes that don't allow them to meet their basic needs. These are people that are your neighbors, your friends, and fellow community members. Whether you know it or not, it's very likely someone you know has utilized a program or service from a food bank. Last year, the Gallatin Valley Food Bank alone helped over 3,900 households meet their food needs. For comparison's sake, this equates to 11% of all households in the Gallatin County and almost 20% of all households in the Bozeman area. At the Gallatin Valley Food Bank, we are committed to understanding the root causes of hunger in our area. We wondered if there was more we could do to reduce our customers' dependency on emergency food assistance and increase food security beyond increasing limits of program use and increasing the amount of food provided. Ensuring food security means ensuring household economic security, ensuring access to healthy, affordable food, ensuring access to federal nutrition programs, and finally, making sure people have access to emergency food resources. Last year, while conducting program evaluation, the Gallatin Valley Food Bank asked its customers if there are ways to help them improve their situation and seek emergency food assistance less. What we found was that food insecurity and hunger are symptoms of economic insecurity. The economic climate is challenging for many of our customers. Many are working low-wage jobs that just are not enough to make ends meet. And while we have little control over things like the economy, the Gallatin Valley Food Bank is dedicated to empowering our customers and giving them the necessary resources to weather such challenges. We are currently developing programs to provide our customers with practical skills training, including but not limited to nutrition, gardening, food budgeting, shopping strategies, hands-on meal preparation, food safety, and meal planning. Most of these activities will take place at our community cafe, a program of the Food Bank and Human Resource Development Council that provides nutritionally balanced meals 365 days a year. Shorter condensed lessons and handouts, as well as food samples, will be provided to Food Bank customers that want extra information and exposure to new and different foods while they shop. Ultimately, we hope to empower customers and increase their individual capacity to meet their own food needs by providing them with skills, resources, and connections that will help them cope with limited budgets, unexpected expenses, or other challenges. So while the recession is thought to be over, its impact will be felt for some time. But ending hunger isn't just about giving customers skills and resources to reduce dependency on emergency food assistance. It's also about engaging customers, volunteers, and community members in their local food system. Work at this level could produce a critical shift from providing services and support to organizing citizens and civic organizations and businesses to improve the local food environment and the conditions that cause food insecurity. Communities with resilient food systems are better able to withstand natural disasters that put temporary limits on food distribution or high fuel costs that might drive up food costs. Ending hunger also involves changing the way we view food. Access to healthy food should be viewed as a basic human right. Communities also need to recognize that the ability to access healthy food is often related to multiple issues and not just the result of living in poverty. And while the food bank strives to meet basic food needs, we must also foster opportunities for community members to build mutual support networks, connect to resources, and find their voices so they can tell their stories. I'm Monica for the Alternative Energy Resources Organization. Arrow is a grassroots membership organization that's been building communities by linking people with sustainable agriculture and energy solutions for more than 35 years. If you'd like to get involved, give us a call in Helena at 406-443-7272.
Monica Ruiz is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition, and the views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.